This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. We are less than 2 weeks away, ladies and gentlemen, from the start of the college football season. A salute to all of you to continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It's really been humbling to see it all, and I know I say that a lot, but you guys are awesome, and hopefully as the football season goes on, we will continue to grow this podcast and continue to have the success that we've been having. It's been a lot of fun this offseason, and hopefully you enjoy the podcast today with a couple of big-time guests. Stanford Steve from ESPN, you know him from Scott Van Pelt Sports Center at Midnight Eastern. You know him from Bad Beats. You know him from College Game Day. And he will be headed to Dublin for College Game Day abroad in less than a week, I believe, as we will have a lengthy conversation. We will talk about some of his favorite plays as he has now gone in depth on all of the college football teams. And we'll also talk about that season opener, Florida State, Georgia Tech. It's been interesting to look at the market in that one where it touched Florida State minus 14 over in Dublin. And now 11.5, 12 is kind of where it sits, with the Ramblin' Wreck getting a little bit of love. So we'll get into the ACC, his pick to win the ACC. He's got a Heisman Trophy future he's got locked up, and maybe a team to go undefeated in the regular season. I wouldn't say completely off the radar, but a little bit off the radar. So Stanford Steve going to come up in just a little bit. Last week, I was fortunate enough to moderate the college football betting preview at Bet Bash. And really what my job was to set up the two smart people, Brett McMurphy and Bud Elliott. And we had a lot of fun doing so. Had a very good crowd. Spanky's event, seems like, from what everyone said, was another massive success this year. And I appreciated Spanky reaching out to me to allow me to be a part of Bet Bash. But I chatted with Bud Elliott and Brett McMurphy on VSiN Primetime last week. And if you missed that conversation, we're going to have it for you at the back end of the podcast. It's about a 25-minute chat with both Brett and Bud Elliott. Some really good teams, or really good stuff, I should say, in that conversation. So that's coming up a little bit later on in the podcast. A couple things I wanted to hit on before we get to Stanford Steve. The AP poll is out, and to be honest, it doesn't really do much from a betting standpoint. I will mention a couple of nuggets that Brett McMurphy pointed out regarding the AP top 10. So if you haven't seen it by now, Georgia 1, Ohio State 2, Oregon 3, Texas 4, Bama 5, Ole Miss 6, Notre Dame 7, Penn State 8, Michigan 9, Florida State 10. From unranked to top 10, there has been at least one team every season in the past 30 years, with the exception of 2011 and 2020, that started unranked but finished in the AP top 10. Which unranked team finishes in the top 10 was the question that Brett McMurphy posed. Last year, it was Missouri, who finished number 8 after starting the season unranked. And I saw a couple of the responses. Virginia Tech, that is a very popular team this year with all of the production they returned. They are not in the top 25. Could a team like Boise State make a run into the top 10? Could a team like Memphis, who is not in the preseason top 25? You look at the group of five ranks. USC is in the top 25. I think the ceiling is pretty high for USC, as is Texas A&M, top 20 as well. Brett McMurphy also pointed this out. Current head coaches whose team started in the AP top 10 and finished unranked, and this tends to be a thing each and every year. Lincoln Riley and USC last year started in the top 10, finished unranked. Baylor and Oklahoma in 2022. North Carolina and Iowa State in 2021. Penn State and Oregon in 2020. And no team started in the top 10 and finished unranked in 2019. Auburn did it in 2018. Notre Dame did it in 2016 as well. And Brett also just pointed out the head coaches that was a part of. So some good stuff there. But, you know, once again, from the betting standpoint, the AP top 25 doesn't really do much for us as bettors. I did have a question, and I'm going to ask this to Steve here in a little bit. And I posed it on Twitter. You could follow me at @1TimMurray. There are 7 teams that are currently a favorite at Circa Sports to make the college football playoff. That would be Ohio State at -$8, Georgia at -575, Texas at -235, Oregon at -380, Notre Dame -180, Penn State -150, and Ole Miss at -130, meaning that on the flip side, you have 7 opportunities at plus money or even money in the case of Ole Miss for teams to miss the playoff. Tommy Lorenzen chimed in on Twitter at @SportsbookTom and said it'll be Texas. He's got the horns down. Blake Griffin, the Pride Oklahoma alum there, giving the horns down. Don in Brookfield, that's a town I believe in Wisconsin, he said, other than the perennially overrated Notre Dame team, the other team that isn't on this list that I don't think will make the college football playoff is Alabama. Well, Alabama is not technically a favorite at Circa, but they are -105 to make the college football playoff at Circa. -105 on the yes, -125 on the no. Vienna Jeff, Ohio State, they'll lose at Oregon, and they can't beat Michigan. Bill on Twitter, Bill M, I can't say his last name, his Twitter handle at @TheRealBigMarge. Is Franklin still the coach at Penn State? Many .. Get Bent, a Wisconsin fan. Notre Dame, overrated every year. Chris Baer, Ole Miss, and Notre Dame. So it looks like the overwhelming selection from Twitter would be Notre Dame at +150. If I had to make a play on this, I would go Texas. And we'll talk about the loss of C.J. Baxter. Bud Elliott had some good insight on that when we chatted on VSiN Primetime. But hey, look at the schedule, man. Week 2, you go to Michigan. Yes, you're a favorite there. You get Oklahoma in the Red River Shootout, Georgia, Florida State, and then at Texas A&M. It's a challenging schedule there for Steve Sarkisian. And if I had to make a play, it probably would be Texas. It wouldn't be Penn State. I beg your pardon. I actually like this Penn State team, and I think they'll win enough to get into the college football playoff. I think no school might be happy about the expanded college football playoff more so than Penn State. When you look at where they finished following every regular season the past handful of years, never made the 4-team playoff, but would have made the 12-team playoff a number of times. And the addition of Andy Koltunicki from Kansas to be their offensive coordinator, massive upgrade there. And then I think it was an upgrade, Tom Allen coming in from Indiana to take over for Manny Diaz, who left to go be the head coach at Duke. All right, a couple more quick things before we take a break and talk to Stanford Steve of ESPN. I've been itching, man, for some win totals. I have yet to make another one. We will obviously make those official here on the podcast. And we've gone through all of the win totals on this podcast and the future bets as well. My win totals that officially have been handed out on this podcast and on VSiN Primetime, Iowa over 7.5. SMU over 7.5 is not an official play, but that's one I have in pocket. UCLA under 5.5. Hawaii over 4.5. Notre Dame, we talked about how we took Notre Dame exactly 10 wins and Notre Dame over 10.5 wins to create a -$2 over 9.5 market. Duke under 2.5 ACC wins and Houston under 2.5 Big 12 wins. The reason I laugh is we just talked about the AAC with Adam Burke, who wrote it up for the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. And make sure, as always, to check out our VSiN College Football Betting Guide over at vsin.com/subscribe for all of the offers. I am so tempted to play Temple under 2.5 wins. The trigger finger is getting itchy. It's $2.50 to the under. Last year, Temple went 3-9. They won 2 games against Akron and Norfolk State. They don't play any FCS teams this year. And if you look at Tyler Shoemaker, who does his own numbers at T-Shoe Index, if you look at Brad Powers, who does his own numbers, anyone else who does their own numbers, they're an underdog in every game. And they're an underdog by 5 or more in every single game. The one game that would give me pause, Tulsa off a bye. They're about a 5.5 point underdog based off of power ratings that are out there. You look at this schedule, at Oklahoma, at Navy, revenge game. They beat Navy a year ago, their only AAC win. Coastal Carolina, Utah State. Granted, Utah State not in great shape, firing their coach just a couple weeks ago. Short week to prepare for Army, at UConn, bye week, Tulsa, at ECU, who I think will be much improved, and there are sharp guys that agree on that. Bye week, at Tulane, FAU, at UTSA, North Texas. Haven't gotten there yet. This team in Temple brings back not a lot from an experience standpoint. Phil Steele, 129th in experience. Bill Conley, SP Plus, 130th in experience. Stan Drayton, it seems like, will be fired at some point this year. I don't see it, man. It's going to be a very big challenge. They should have some positive regression, I believe, from a turnover standpoint that Phil Steele pointed out. I think they were like minus 20 in turnovers last year. So haven't gotten there yet, but definitely one that I am interested in. Lastly, I will add this as a game of the year best bet. And that's a game that we've talked about, I believe, on this podcast. And I know we've talked about it on VSiN Primetime. And I believe Paul Stone mentioned it, but if not, I know Paul is in on this game. So earlier this week, you saw Coach Prime, let's be honest, make a fool of himself, or late last week, not answering questions from the media, dragging the media down. And maybe it was a tactic by Coach Prime to deflect from his team. Shedeur Sanders, his son, high profile quarterback, Travis Hunter. The expectations there in Colorado year two. So Colorado opens up the year with a Thursday night game against North Dakota State. They're about an 8.5 point favorite. Betting market actually is backing Colorado in that spot, and I would tend to agree. I think they'll win that game. Then week two, they go to Nebraska. A Nebraska team that should be vastly improved from a year ago. Just need any semblance of quarterback play. And a Nebraska team that lost to Colorado just a year ago. That game is going to be physical. That game is also primetime, I believe, on NBC. And I think Matt Rhule and company are going to be very, very motivated to get that victory. Then Colorado has to go to in-state rival Colorado State. Week three, the Rams. Last year, College Game Day ascended upon Boulder for that game. There was all of the Mike Norvell disrespect about wearing sunglasses and a hat and all of this and that. There was the big hit on Travis Hunter as well from Colorado State's safety, Jack Howell. This is the first time Colorado State has hosted Colorado since 1996. A lot of these games have been at the Broncos Stadium. Last year was in Boulder. This year, in Fort Collins. Game of the Year lines are out there on this game. And if you have access to the state of Nevada or Las Vegas, if you're coming out here for a sign-up weekend or whatever it may be, why don't you head on over to the South Point and grab the 9 that is out there in favor of Colorado. So we're going to grab the 9 of Colorado State plus the 9. I think Colorado State's a bowl team this year. I think they had some unfortunate mishaps last year. Braden Fowler-Nicolosi tends to turn the ball over too much. Can he cut down on that? But I'm telling you, man, Fort Collins, primetime, CBS, catching north of a touchdown and catching north of a touchdown and a two-point conversion, because remember last year we went to double overtime and Colorado won 43-35. So I think Colorado's an improved team. I really do. But I think Colorado State's an improved team. And I think, Jay Norvell, the head coach of Colorado State. I think Colorado State's a team that is going to be fired up, and I have grabbed the 9 that is out there in the market from a situational standpoint. Also, Colorado plays at Nebraska. Colorado State plays FCS Northern Colorado the week prior. No travel. Not that there's big travel from Boulder to Fort Collins, but home field advantage. They bring back Torrey Horton, one of the most explosive wide receivers in the country. Do lose Dallin Holker, who I was a big fan of, their tight end, but I think that's going to be another war. And I think catching north of 8 at South Point, 7.5 is out there. I still would look at 7.5 at DraftKings, but give me the 9 that is out there on the Colorado State Rams game of the year line against Colorado. All right, later on in the podcast, hear from Bud Elliott and Brett McMurphy. But up next, from ESPN, College Game Day, SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, a bald man that you love, Stanford Steve. He will talk some college football with us on the other side. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, good friend of mine, you know the face, you know the voice. He is Stanford Steve all over the place. Just finished recording his podcast with Scott Van Pelt, the SV Pod. He's a week away from heading over to Dublin for the start of the college football season. You'll see him on College Game Day. You'll see him doing bad beats on Monday nights. SportsCenter with SVP, and you might run into him at Dewey Beach, except I didn't because he was too busy when he was there with his family. Just pointing that out there. What's up, man? How are you?
Excellent. Dewey Beach is done. It's sad. Had a great summer again over there. It's the best place on the East Coast, without a doubt, in my opinion. But you know, kids are involved, and you don't always get to do what you want to do when kids are involved. So, dinners, lunches, beach time, pool time. That's basically what you're at the calling of, is what the kids want to do. It's their time, so that's what we try and do. And I'm sorry again, I missed you down there.
You gave me and my wife a lot of crap last year when we saw you in Vegas about not reaching out. I made sure I specifically texted you, when can we meet up? What can we do? And you know, it's all right. You know, you're very popular. You're a very important person. I'm just happy to have you on the podcast. But all kidding aside, I'm fired up. I know you are as well. Yeah. For the college football season. Before we get into best bets and all of that, give us the itinerary, because College Game Day is going abroad, man. We're going to be waking up in less than 2 weeks. We're going to be watching Reese and the gang, you there as well, in Ireland, which will be pretty neat. What's the itinerary for Stanford Steve headed over to Dublin?
We've had a couple calls so far. We've had our college football seminars. We're all ready to go. Obviously, the big inkling is now the SEC on ABC, which is a huge priority for the company. And I think it's going to be absolutely incredible what people get from a viewership and what we bring to the table as far as that goes. But starting the season, I think in a really, really interesting game, Tim, with Georgia Tech and Florida State. Two teams I think the narratives are totally different on, but I find it interesting with what Florida State brings to the table and the turnover that they've had on their roster, and Uwe Ungalale coming in and being the quarterback, knowing the success that Mike Norvell has had as a play caller, is a very interesting piece to me, how he's going to fit in there, knowing what Mike likes to do as far as, you know, just formations and making runs look like passes. And then you think about DJ and Oregon State, which I always thought as a quarterback-friendly system, but not completing as many passes as far as a percentage. I know plenty of people have pointed that out. But going into a more up-tempo, which can be, Oregon State was not into that. But just how DJ relates to this, there's still plenty of talent on this Florida State roster. But I go back to how good Jordan Travis was in that system with Norvell. He obviously had enough time. Now you bring a quarterback that had spring ball, but just didn't have the time and the reps that Travis had, and then the unfortunate injury. So plenty to go about Florida State. On the other side, I think West Durham pointed out on their Georgia Tech trip with the ACC breakdown when they went there, Georgia Tech plays five quarterbacks that never played a down for their current school on the roster, which I thought was really interesting, knowing that their, I don't want to say weakness, I think their onus on during camp was on their defense, knowing that they bring back plenty of guys on offense. So I think it sets up for a real exciting game. As far as itinerary, we're going over. We'll be there Wednesday morning around 5 a.m. I think we have a Gaelic football activity involved. Somebody told me there's a Gaelic football team here in D.C. I did not know about that.
Who knew?
So, I mean, we got everything here in the district. So that'll be fun. We are going to be set up downtown, which is a little bit away from the stadium. The great thing is we're 5 hours ahead over there, so we don't have to get up early.
That's true.
For game day, which is a huge, huge plus. But never been over there. I saw it sold out. I believe 27,000 tickets are from here in America that the team split, and other ways of getting tickets. And then, so that means 20,000 at least. I'm sure it'll be packed. It's an event. You know, these cities always do well when these events, and especially the Americans, come over. So I'm not a soccer guy. I love the idea of our football traveling over there, which seems to resonate every time it goes over there.
Yeah, second straight year, Temple Bar, that area was swarming last year, and I imagine it'll be very similar this year. Real quickly, because I want to get into the three, so to speak, big boys of the ACC, Steve, mm-hmm. with Clemson, Miami, and Florida State. But I'll tell you this, and you guys do winners every Thursday night on SVP Center, and I could tell you one thing. Georgia Tech's going to be a frequent team, I feel like, this year from Scott Van Pelt, because this is a team that you look at their schedule, the market's moving with them for this game, right? Touch 14, now down to 11.5 at Circa for Florida State. Mm. I don't know how many wins Brent Key's going to have this year, but I'll tell you this, whether it's Florida State, Louisville, North Carolina, Notre Dame, Virginia, Miami, NC State, I mean, it's a loaded schedule. They're going to pick someone off. I don't know if they'll go 6-6 to get to a bowl game like they did last year, but they could be a really entertaining team this year. And I think you alluded to it. I think 2 weeks from now, I think it's going to be a game in Ireland.
Well, what are they, 4.5 Georgia Tech?
I think 5.5, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's I mean, again, these, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but the problem with, I feel like, is all the guys out by you are getting so much better with their numbers. Yep. You know, at first inkling, after reading their preview, I try and read all my stuff on the teams before I see a number. That way I have a general sense. And the first thing everybody points to is the schedule, right? Yep. But now and you mentioned they're going to pick somebody off. They did last year, mm-hmm. you know, and then where they had zero expectations, around anybody you talk to besides their head coach, which brings me to Key. He has been, I think, incredible in the situation that he took over. It seemed like everybody knew that when the change happened from Paul Johnson over, it was going to be ugly, and it wasn't going to be pretty, and it was going to be hard, and there was going to be a way you had to find it. Bring in Jeff Collins. He's a defensive guy, but I think the way to do it is to get offense, but then you got to override that offensive roster that has a bunch of running backs and doesn't have playmakers on the outside. If you have a quarterback that can throw the ball, then they, you know, struck out at the quarterback position where they didn't have a kid that could throw the ball accurately. So Key and his offensive line background, I thought, was perfect. And you saw how they went about business. You know, Haynes King, I believe, you know, there's a stat that he and only Jaden Daniels had. The problem was the interceptions. And that's a team, when you talk about Georgia Tech and you look at these teams that, so let's just say a bowl game would be their season win total. Mm-hmm. How many times they're going to lose the turnover battle, because they're not going to win those games. They don't have the talent. They don't have the depth. You know, you think about Nebraska for the last, you know, whatever amount of years, how much they've struggled with the turnover battle. So when you look at Georgia Tech, the defense has a ton of changeover, a new coordinator, which is exciting, because now you instill beliefs. So is Florida State going to – I think it's better to get Florida State early because of the newness of the people in the system. I still put Norvell up there as a top five play caller in the sport, but I definitely could see Georgia Tech hanging around in this game, knowing what Haynes King brings to the table, and knowing that Georgia Tech knows they have to keep the ball away from Florida State's offense. I think that's important, and I think the onus will be on Haynes King to be more about moving the chains and as opposed to, you know, trying to strike for that big play, because Florida State, again, has plenty of talent on the defensive side. You talk about the defensive line and what they brought in as far as transfers. They still have Peyton, who's a game wrecker on the edge. So that's to me, if Florida State is dominating that defensive line, that's going to turn this game in their favor for sure.
So Florida State hosts Clemson October 5th. They're at Miami October 26th, at Notre Dame November 9th off a bye. And then if you want to throw in a road trip to SMU September 28th. Mm. So it's a pretty challenging schedule for Florida State. And oh, by the way, they close out the season, granted, at home against Florida. Win total sits at 9.5 for the Noles, Steve. Yeah. They are the favorite to win the ACC, but it's kind of jumbled in there. At circa plus 325 Florida State, plus 350 Clemson, 4-1 for Miami. So let's go in order. Florida State, you've kind of hit on a little bit, but diving a little bit deeper, does this team get to double digit wins this year?
I don't see it. Yeah. I don't believe they could do it. The talent is there. I just think the totality, you mentioned the schedule. I think that's the toughest schedule of the top three teams. I do put Clemson, Florida State, and Miami in that tier, in that conference. For the first time or ever, we'll talk about them. I'm in on Miami, and I'm more in on Clemson than I am Florida State. I think there's a general motivation about having guys back. Clemson's going to have plenty of defense. I do think, which we don't see a lot, is a quarterback with another year in a system, and that's what you get with Cade Klubnik at Clemson. Sometimes it does take that long for the light to turn on. But getting back to Florida State, the totality of the schedule, the inconsistency of the quarterback position, where, again, I talked about Jordan Travis. I thought he was just fantastic, a great fit for that Mike Norvell system. They're not going to be as good as they were on offense this year as opposed to last year, and I think that's what catches up to them. When you talk about going to have to play at the places on the road they're going to have to, that's what I think ends up being the bit. I do see 9-3 as a win total, but that's not good enough when you have a number at 9.5.
All right, let's get to Clemson. Coming off of a four-loss ACC year, but after Tyler from Spartanburg called into the radio show, they didn't lose. They rattled off consecutive wins, five straight to close out the year. Did the Tigers? It'll be year two for Garrett Riley with that offense. Cade Klubnik back for another year. Phil Maffa, that dude was an absolute monster. Still giving me nightmares as a Notre Dame fan, but. Mm. They're plus 350 to win this conference this year. They open up with that neutral site game, which will be on ABC against Georgia, where, depending on what book you look at, either a 13 or 14-point underdog in that one. Kind of a unique week two showdown against App State. Some people believe that could be your group of five representative in the college football playoffs, Steve. Mm-hmm. At Florida State, no Miami. What do you make of this Clemson team heading into this year?
Just a couple numbers that I had our research look into. As you start looking at, I asked the last time they were a double-digit dog. This is the third time they're a double-digit dog under Dabo, the first time since 2014 at Florida State. It's the biggest underdog role since 2012 when they were plus 14.5 at Florida State. So those are pretty eye-opening to me, but what I think Dabo wants. You constantly talk about a coach that's been there, and all the talk is about stuff off the field and what he hasn't done in the portal. They still have plenty of talent. And you said Garrett Riley, another. I thought that was a tough transition last year. That's why I didn't believe in there. I thought when you looked at the pieces and not having the stud receivers they've always had, but also always having Will at running back. And I'm with you. I always thought Maffa got to get more carries. But then you're trailing in games, and then some of your game plan goes out the window. Offensive line hasn't been great. It's still good enough to win games, but I think they're worth a shot at winning the conference. I believe it's Clemson and Miami as the top two teams, and you have them at, what did you say, 9.5 again?
Nine, flat nine.
Yeah, I would take a shot at nine. I'd take the over with knowing what I have on the defensive side. Everybody you talk to, they're not at the Mike Williams, Nuke Hopkins style of receiver, but it's better than what they've had. And that's what happens. That I don't want to say they got lucky, but I think that's what they examined was they hit so many home runs with their skill guys when Deshaun and Trevor were there that they, you know, misfired. And that happens when you're bringing in 4 and 5 star receivers in this day and age, and you only see how many much more of them there are. You know, it's tough to get by when you misassess those things, especially when you have a young quarterback as Klubnik. So I think the combination of Mafa, who's more of a bell cow, who could give you 20 carries, as opposed to Shipley, who you want to get the ball in space, I think that helps more for an identity standpoint with Clemson. But I look at their defense. They're going to have defense. They're always going to play very well at home. It's a great home field. So I think it's right there. I think it's them in Miami in the conference title game. So I would lean towards the over with Clemson.
All right, let's get to Miami. It was funny. I was doing a panel at Bet Bash last week, and Brett McMurphy kind of put his head down and said, I kind of believe in Miami. It almost is like faux pas now, Steve, to believe in Miami. The talent's there. The question is the coaching staff, and can you trust Mario Cristobal year 3 after a pretty disappointing season a year ago where they lost 5 games in conference play. Open up on the road at Florida. That was a game that touched 3, is now sitting around 2 in favor of the Canes. Mentioned no Clemson. They get Virginia Tech at home on a Friday night, which will be kind of fun, kind of shades of what it used to be in the Big East. Florida State at home. Miami right now, win total sits at 9. They're 4-1 to win this conference, 2-1 to make the college football playoff. Steve, how are you looking to attack the Canes?
I like the Canes a lot this year. I'm with Brett in the sense of I have never took the bait, whatever it is, this 12 years, wherever, how far you want to go back. I never was a believer. I always thought there was instability in the quarterback position, matter of things. But with Cristobal, okay, everybody wants to point out the Georgia Tech game and this game when he was at Oregon and Stanford. But I still go back and look at I loved the staff he brought in when he first got the job at Miami. I thought he did a great job with that. So that was a win. He's always going to recruit at a high level. We've talked about for years Miami getting those homegrown guys and winning the state in recruiting, which hasn't happened. That sort of seems back. When you look at the freshmen that played last year, at positions you don't see a lot. And I'm talking about interior defensive line, defensive end, offensive line. Like, that's where you build your program from the inside out. And Mario's hit home runs. I go back to the staff. I think it's a great staff. People talk about the Georgia Tech game. What did they do right after that? They came back and beat Clemson with a quarterback that's never played before. Like, that just doesn't happen because you're lucky. That's a head coach instilling in a system and a belief in his players. So as much as people want to bang on Cristobal, I get it. I didn't think it was going to be an overnight deal with Miami. I thought there were, again, you had to go back to look at all those Miami rosters, why they were good. It's the offensive and defensive line. I mean, you had all pros on both sides when those teams were great. And there's a foundation there. Now, look at what they did in the portal. And I love Damian Martinez. I think he is more versatile than what he even showed at Oregon State. And Cam Ward is a guy who I loved, you know, at Incarnate Word when you saw what he could do. And then you thought about him in a Pac-12 offense. You're like, oh, that's going to be shiny. It's going to be new. It's what Washington State needs when you're going against big boy teams like Oregon, Washington, and USC. But now he doesn't have to do all that. He has to take care of the football. He has plenty of weapons. When you talk about what he has on the edge, Restrepo's a great receiver, a guy that you can rely on, that they have relied on in years previous. You know, you mentioned Martinez. Arroyo at tight end, I think, is a great asset. So when you look at Miami and how they're built, you look at the schedule, you look at what they're up against, I have them going to the playoff. Now, I will say this, and I've said it places previously, I believe they lose week 1 and make the playoff. I really do feel that way, because when I talk about all this good in Miami, that first Saturday in the Swamp is not only going to be a hostile environment, but you're going to have as hungry a team as you have in all college football. And knowing all anyone has mentioned about Florida football this offseason is their schedule, that's fine with the team that's in that locker room. There's plenty of belief with Billy Napier and that staff. And I just look at the sense of urgency that Florida's going to have and what Miami might. And, you know, they might, you know, those pieces that I mentioned to bring it in, they might not know what they're really, really good at, but they're going to find themselves in that game. And if they keep it close enough, they might have the goods to pull it out in the second half. But I'm not going to be surprised if Florida wins that game. So being an out of conference game and knowing that what my, I mean, all that we touched on Clemson, Georgia, Clemson's the same way. You know, going back to them for a second, it's not like Dabo went 4-8 in a season or 5-7. Like, they still had plenty of success. So now you go up against the number one team in the country. You're going to find out more about your team in those 60 minutes than you did from February to that time you walk into Georgia and play Georgia, right? So you're going to learn a lot. The same thing with Miami here. They're going to iron out. They're going to know how much better their young guys got on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They're going to know what Cam had trouble with defensively. But I'm not going to be surprised, and I'm not going to overreact if Miami loses that game, knowing what they have from a capability as far as the roster, the coaching staff, and an opportunity that schedule brings them.
Well, and I think you pick up a great point, which is, look, we live in the gambling world, right? You know, and people want preseason bets.
Yeah.
But with the fact of the schedule being what it is and the playoff expanding, like, let's look at A&M Notre Dame, Georgia Clemson, and Miami Florida. The loser of all three of those games, I think, all have a shot to still make the playoff, and you could get really interesting numbers on that. So, you know, to your point, maybe Miami at 2-1 to make the playoff isn't worth a bet right now, Steve, and you wait. And I'll tell you this, I didn't text you this, and sometimes I'll do this and I probably bug you doing it. I can guarantee that Florida will be on winners heading into week one. Guarantee it. 100%, right? 100%. Home dog. Everybody's talking about Miami. Everyone, to your point, and I've mentioned it God knows how many times, that schedule in November might be the hardest thing ever in the history of college football, but it's August 31st in the swamp at 3:30 Eastern when it's going to be 127 degrees on that field.
No doubt. And that's what people, because again, they haven't had the success. I think it's three straight losing seasons now, since first time since like 40, 45 for Florida fans. And I get it. And Scott did a whole spiel last week about just trust what you have there. You have a guy that's coached everywhere. The Rashada saga was just brutal. The timing of it, and know what he's trying to instill in a program. That's awful. But, you know, a couple Saturdays from now, you're going to strap it up and you got to believe you can win that game. Against Miami, you have everything you want. You just talked about it. You got a sold out stadium, you got an in-state rival coming in, and you're perceived as the underdog. That's all I would need to motivate my team. So I totally agree with you. I've thought about all those markets that, you know, are gonna change, but like, first time with a 12-team playoff, how much are they going to change? Like, is Notre Dame going to really change that much if they were to lose? Clemson, it's not going to matter because they already have them perceived as a double-digit dog. But Miami and Notre Dame, I don't know. I would wait and see that. And if you win it, I don't see much change or fluctuation in those numbers changing. But with so much unknown, with all this sport has come to, combined with the expansion of the playoff, you got to feel better about yourselves, you know, having a chance at the end, knowing that you have a whole season. Look at Florida last year. They looked as bad as anybody in the country going to Utah that first game in Salt Lake City. Rising doesn't even play. They can't get out of their own way. They look bad. And what do? 2 weeks later, they come home and they beat Tennessee as an underdog. Like, that was to a T, and that's why I still believe in what Billy Napier has in Florida, and I expect them to win that game week one.
We have seven teams right now that are a favorite to make the playoff. I opened the podcast with it, pondering which one of these teams is most likely not to make it, but I want to key in on one of the teams that you do like. So I'll run through them real quickly. It's Georgia, -575. Ohio State, -800, Texas, -235, Oregon, -380, Penn State, -150, Notre Dame, -180, and Ole Miss, -130. There's a lot of buzz and hype down in Oxford with Lane Kiffin's squad this year, and understandably so. Your schedule's pretty soft out of the chute. Then you have to go to LSU October 12th. You get Georgia at home. No Alabama this year. You get Oklahoma at home. Win total sits at 9.5, as I alluded to. Slight favorite for them to make the playoff. Jackson Dart around 15-1 to win the Heisman. You're buying in on the Rebs this year, so lead us to water here on Ole Miss.
Yeah, I put them in the same category as Miami. I've never been a believer, but I do believe in what the Portal King has done here in Oxford. I love what he did, the pieces he got. The one bet I do have is Jackson Dart for Heisman. Look at what he's done in fourth quarters last year. They came back a bunch. And knowing that I have him, now that I've supplanted better assets, I got it. They lost Quinshon Judkins. Okay, but I'm just going to mention this. Maybe they didn't want to keep him. Maybe
he was expensive.
As I was going to say, maybe the price was too high and they could do better with other assets on the edge, knowing that you like what you have in protecting Jackson Dart. You have running backs that have had success, and maybe you're more a believer in him in throwing the football, which I think you're going to have to do in the SEC this year. You look at the tight end situation. I love Priest Corn in his versatility, what he bring, like what he did to Penn State, that number one defense last year. Like that's a coach taking advantage of a matchup that he knew he had that maybe others didn't. And I didn't see, I think he had 10 catches in that number against that number one defense in Penn State. The defense, not crazy. Nolan comes in as a highly touted guy, but you talk to any coach in the country, and the one thing that always comes up is depth on the defensive line. And it feels like it's sparse all across the country. And when you look at this part of the season or part of this team, they have multiple guys where they haven't had. And I think that's what's got them into trouble against an Alabama, a team that they've struggled against is through the course of 60 minutes, having enough bodies to withstand the pounding and how physical that game can be. But in its totality, you mentioned the soft schedule to start. He brings in so many pieces. He can really sift through what he likes and what he doesn't and who he wants to get the ball more to. So I look at Juice Wells as a guy who was as good as anybody. Had a problem with the foot. I didn't understand that last year. Maybe it went into what South Carolina was doing on the field. I don't know. But I look at him as talented a guy as they is, as there is. Harris on the edge was awesome for Jackson Dart. You really saw a connection with those guys. So I'm in on Ole Miss. I like the over. I like him to make the playoff. I do believe they play in the conference title game. So that's another dynamic when you talk about playoff and odds. I would think in the ACC, maybe not. No, definitely in the SEC and the Big Ten, in a narrative or a world we've never seen, because of divisions, look at the Big Ten the last couple of years, Michigan against Iowa, Michigan against Purdue. We didn't think anything.
Ohio State, Northwestern.
Yeah, we didn't think anything as the underdog. I would think in the SEC and the Big Ten, the two teams that make the conference championship game are going to be in.
Oh, yeah.
No division. Like, you're going to have a damn good season if you make the conference championship game in those two conferences. And if it all goes right, also in the ACC. So I'm just not sure how that Clemson – what was it? Clemson doesn't play Miami in the regular season, right?
They do not, yeah.
Yeah, so that
Florida State plays both.
That's going to be a factor. So when I look at Ole Miss, I like the idea of them having the most wins when you look at other teams that I put in the mix as far as Alabama, LSU, to
Georgia.
Tennessee. Georgia, I put in their own tier in that yeah. conference. In yeah, that yeah. conference, I do right now. Right now, I do knowing what they have. So the schedule does dictate a little bit more for me with Ole Miss, but I really, really like the roster and how Lane has assembled it.
So of the other six teams, Georgia, Notre Dame, Oregon, Penn State, Texas, and Ohio State, who do you have the most questions about, and who would you look at maybe some plus money for them to miss the playoff?
I look at Texas.
Yep, that was my pick.
I think it's going to be an eye-opening experience going to Michigan because you know what Michigan's going to want to do. I don't think they're going to be supplanted in what they want to do at the quarterback position. But you know what they're going to bring to the table as far as the defensive line. And when I talk about all this lack of depth on the defensive side, the one thing I do think about as far as the edge, I do think LSU, Texas, as long as Proctor works out with Alabama, those three offensive lines are going to be really, really, really good. And when you match that up to lack of depth what other coaches are talking about, I look at that as a plus, a huge plus for those teams. But Michigan's got a whole new offensive line coming in. The quarterback, I think, is a monster question mark. And I get JJ didn't have the stats that everybody did, but you go back and look what he did to win games. It doesn't get enough credit for what he did. So I think Michigan's up against it, but you're going to rely on that defense. You got an NFL first rounder at corner. You got the two studs at defensive tackle. You got a linebacker in Barham that comes from Maryland, who I thought was incredible. And you just plug and play him in alongside the other backer you have coming in. So Texas, I think, is up against it in that game. And again, it's one of those we touched on earlier in the year, week one. That's not a conference game. So if you were going to lose a game, I'm not saying anybody wants to. It's an out-of-conference game against a big boy program. The problem is now you're at the mercy of what Michigan does the rest of the year. That's going to be held against you more so than in years previous because of the expansion of the playoff. But Texas, I think, is a lot of pieces. I love what they brought in with Bolden and the other receiver from Alabama. The offensive line is a strength. Talking to guys there, they really like the ability of at the edge position they've brought in. Where we know they had studs at the defensive line and they dictated their defense off of that. But when you had those guys, they had to bring extra guys to get pressure on the quarterback. I don't think they're going to have to do that this year in Austin. But when you're asking me to pick a team amongst those others, that's the one that kind of sticks out because I want to see, as much as we talk about Texas, I'm a huge Sark fan. I think he's the best play caller in the sport. I just want to see him do it again. That's all. And you factor in this totality of an SEC schedule, and there's no more, games, where you could find yourself with, Iowa State coming in or, somebody like that where you're superior in talent. You're going to have – they're way tougher places. I think somebody did a study. Texas and Oklahoma – The largest stadiums they, because Red River is at Dallas.
Dallas, yeah.
The biggest stadiums they played on the road, I think, is Ames, Iowa, in the old Big 12. So like that's a whole different deal you're going on the road this year when you look at Texas and Oklahoma as opposed to the old Big 12.
Well, I can tell you one thing: if we think Labor Day weekend's going to be jacked up in College Station for Notre Dame coming to town, just wait until Thanksgiving weekend when Texas returns to College Station.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be wild. All right, let me get two quick hitters before I let you run here. We know you're a Chip guy. What do you anticipate from Chip heading to Ohio State, back to his roots, calling plays, mm-hmm. not the worry of being the head coach? He's got all the toys you could want there in Columbus, but expectations, Steve, are through the roof. If they don't win a title, it's going to be thought of as a disappointment there for Ohio State. So what do you make of the Buckeyes and Chip Kelly now being their OC?
I don't think the expectations change that much with how crazy that fan base is, Tim. I really don't. And I love them because they are that crazy. Wherever we go and they are involved, it's just a monstrosity of Garnett and Gray. Or I should say Scarling, whatever they are.
Sorry. They're going to get mad at you.
Yeah, my bad. I love you, Columbus. Like, I go back to a story. It was Ohio State against Wisconsin, the Big Ten title game in Indianapolis. And I went out there. Scott was, following the game. And I went out there with a producer to get Ryan Day. If they won, they were going to go to the playoff. And so we're there in town for the game. I said, let's go grab lunch. It's an 8:00 kick. And we go out. And every single, if you've been to Indianapolis, you walk everywhere, bars and restaurants, it's the best. And every place has a line out the door. And Andy Katzenmoyer jerseys and Troy Smith jerseys. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Ohio State had a basketball game that day against Penn State. So every Ohio State fan went out to start drinking and watch the game for a noon tip off. And they went till 8 o'clock at night to go to the game. And then they raided the bars after they beat Wisconsin in that Big Ten title game. So the craziness of them is real. It's awesome. They can't, I mean, what they did in the portal and in getting players is a direct effect of seeing your rival that's as hated as they are win a national championship. And now what do? Now you get the naysayers or the people that are just don't want to say anything good about your program on top of the people that don't like you. So I think it's good. I think it instills something in a team. All these pieces, there has to be a buy-in now that you have these guys coming in, and maybe guys do know what everybody got in that locker room. Regardless, with Chip coming in, I like the idea of Ryan Day being able to put focus on other things, where you finally got Knowles as DC. That defense was awesome last year. McCord, was he the problem? No, I don't think he was the problem, but I think you saw a kid in big situations hold on to the ball a little bit, not see the right read he was supposed to read. And it was basically a one-game deal at Michigan. And, you know, there's a turn. I thought that was a fumble still at the beginning for Michigan, but it ends up being a touchdown, and that sways the game. But going back to this team, they have everything you want. Listening to Chip on the Big Ten preview, I thought it was pretty eye-opening when he talks about hearing what people's thoughts were on the offensive line and then him getting there and then him talking about and comparing what he has in offensive line at Ohio State compared to what he had at UCLA and him leading the Pac-12 and rushing with that offensive line. I think he's pretty excited. They have plenty of options. Jeremiah, the true freshman receiver, he talked about they did an offseason Olympics where they had everybody do the broad jump. He broad jumped 11-2.
He's a freak of nature.
That would have been number one at the NFL Combine this year. He's a true freshman. So I am curious to see about the Will Howard situation at quarterback with them, with the way the schedule is. Do you get, Julian Sang some time? Do you get the other Devin Brown some time to try? Like the best thing I always thought that Chip did was try and get as many things on tape so you have to spend time preparing for more stuff, where you don't give away what you really like to do, and maybe it's your favorite formation. Last year against San Diego State, UCLA comes out in a freaking T formation with Carson Steele in the backfield. Like, that's another thing a team has to prepare for. So I think they're going to have plenty of options. The roster is loaded. What do you think? What's a tougher game, at Oregon or at Penn State?
At Oregon.
Okay.
I love Oregon, man. I'm all in on this Oregon team. I haven't bet them to win the title because I think it's a three-headed monster. I mentioned it last week, Steve, on the podcast, that I have a cross-sport, shout out to the Bear, future parlay here, which is Eagles to win the NFC East, Oregon to make the playoff at +154. I love this Oregon team. But I think this is my, I don't think it's a hot take. Whoever loses in Eugene wins the Big Ten.
Wow. Okay.
What do you think? So I'll flip it to you. Is that Penn State game going to be at night? That's what I don't know.
No.
Like, and that's the problem. Like, and I'm not trying to bag on your competition. That's me saying it.
That's
fine. Like,
that's fine. You can do it.
Like, but I've been to a night game there at a whiteout. And I know, like, JVT asked me the other day, he was like, how much does it really impact the game? I'm like, dude, when you're in there and that place is pitch white and it's dark, there's just some mojo there. And and not to say that a noon game wouldn't be exciting, but it's just something different. You it agree is. Or disagree?
Totally agree. Totally agree. I think it's Penn State just because of the familiarity.
Okay.
Ohio State did lose to Oregon. What was that, 2 years? We got cheated out of the game of Ohio State.
They lost. Yeah. Ohio State, Kayvon Thibodeau came to Ohio State and beat them.
Yeah.
And then they ran the table until they lost to Michigan.
Correct. That was CJ Stroud.
Yes.
Yep, and Vardell was the running back at Oregon. I think Brown was the quarterback for Oregon. Yeah, I think it's Penn State just because there's more familiarity. And Penn State, I believe, is going to be a better version of themselves this year.
They got two upgrades at coordinator, in my opinion. I like Manny Diaz, but Tom Allen, defensive coordinator, and Colton Nicky coming in at OC. Holy smokes, man.
Yeah, I love what Penn State brings to the table this year when you look at them compared to last year. I'm not saying their ceiling is as high as Georgia or Ohio State. I'm just looking at what they have. Because, you know, the excuses are gone. You can't use the toughest division in the sport anymore. You don't have to play Michigan. So I look at Penn State with a huge upside possibility this year. And that's why I think that place, I think it'll be tougher.
All right, last one for me. I know I've kept you long. Utah, this is a conference that is so intriguing to me because I think there's so many teams that could vie for this conference. I've said as many as 10. Maybe that's a bit of a stretch. But Utah, Kansas State, they are, based off of the odds, a little bit in the tier onto their own in that 3-1 range. Utah at DK is plus 320, win total 9.5, and you asked me to look this up. To go undefeated, and this doesn't include the conference championship, just the 12 regular season games, plus 475 for the Utes. So parting words from you, Utah headed into 2024. What do you expect from Coach Whittingham's squad?
All right. First off, I don't think there's going to be one undefeated team in the country this year. If I had to bet a team, it would be Utah. When you talk about a head coach instilling what you want in a football program, that is Kyle Whittingham at Utah. How the hell they won 8 games last year, I'll never know with what they had. Being on the field for that Oregon debacle last year, I mean, that game was over in the first 3 plays. I want to say Bo Nix got a delay a game to start the game, and then they scored in 3 plays. Then they scored in 4 plays, and it was done. The defense was dominating. But when I look at Utah, this is what I find really, really fun, is look at what they did in the portal, and I see an identity change. Knowing that it looks like it's, you know, hearing Coach Witt talk about the running back room, they're not going to have a guy. It's going to be a cast of a couple guys, but the portal and the receiver group is great. You talk about Singer, they bring in Pittman's a guy who had monster expectations going to Tallahassee, never worked out there. I trust him going to Utah and it working out. Keithy is one of the guys I was most fired up to watch in college football last year. He didn't even play. Yeah. Now you get him back. He was best player on the field 2 years ago, and that included Anthony Richardson beating Utah in that game in Gainesville. So I look at Cam Rising in Utah as a team that's going to go about things differently, and they have the ability to sling it all over the place. I get it was SC and USC's defense twice, but Cam Rising, when he wanted to throw the football, was darn good at it. So I look at Utah, again, if a team has to, there's a monster game at Oklahoma State in September. But when you look at what they bring to the table, Scally's always going to have a good defense. If a team were to go undefeated in the sport, which, again, I don't think is going to happen, I would lay it on Utah.
UCF regular season finale, just saying. Okay. At the Bounce House that Friday, if it's 11-0, just take a little bit of the UCF money line.
Oh, okay. I'll write that in right now.
Hey, Steve, I kept you a long time, man. You're the man. This makes up for you blowing me off at Dewey Beach. Much appreciated, brother.
Next year, Dewey Beach, you got it.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Thanks again to Stanford Steve from ESPN for jumping on and giving us some insight. Lengthy conversation there. And I wanted to wrap up the podcast with a interview we did on VSiN Primetime. JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, my co-host, was out last week. And you can catch us 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time each and every weekday on VSiN. But jumping in studio with us was Bud Elliott from CBS Sports and the Cover 3 podcast, and a man who will dabble in betting on college football games, sets his own numbers. And then Brett McMurphy, who works at the Action Network and has been an insider for many, many years. So we had a really lengthy conversation, two segments, and we're going to break it up here. But the first segment we started was talking about the injury news that came out late last week. Texas running back C.J. Baxter was lost for the season. So I started off our conversation and I targeted Bud Elliott to start this chat. Just how much of a loss is it for Texas? And does C.J. Baxter, even though he's a running back, affect his personal betting numbers?
I think Baxter is one of the few running backs that I would actually consider downgrading somewhat, basically because C.J. is such a good catcher of the football. I mean, he actually played receiver for a while as a sophomore at Edgewater High School there in Orlando. I've seen this guy a lot. And the fact that, you know, beyond Jaden Blue, who's now the backup, who I assume will shoulder most of the load, they don't have very much proven depth. And Texas really likes to throw the ball to the backs and get creative, and Sark schemes up, you know, a lot of his wheel routes out of nowhere that they're able to get. So he's one of the very few backs in college football that I actually do think is worth taking a look at for a power rating standpoint.
Brett, when you talk to so many coaches around the college football world, Sark and his ability to kind of adapt and roll with the punches, how big of a loss is this? And do you trust in Sark that he can scheme it up so it's not that big of a loss for Texas?
Yeah, like Bud talked about, it is big. I mean, he started six games last year as a freshman. He was counted on to be the guy this year, although they do have that two-back system. And again, this is one of the reasons why I thought Texas and Oklahoma would struggle, not because of this injury, but in the SEC, because they're moving up from the Big 12 to the SEC. This is light years difference. Now you're losing your starting running back. That depth is starting to get eroded. They haven't even played any games yet. Their schedule, super tough compared to last year. I believe consecutive games against Oklahoma and Georgia. How are you going to get up back-to-back for those games? I didn't think it was going to be easy. We're looking at the win total right now, 10.5. It's minus 180. I agree 1,000% with that. They're going to lose two games.
Well, and week two, they go to the Big House to take on Michigan, and we get the news today about Jim Harbaugh. Does that affect the number this year? No, not necessarily, but it leads to the conversation. Man, you look at that Michigan schedule, Bud. You know, this is a team that brings back, what, I think Phil Steele had them 117th in returning production when they were 7th in the country just a year ago. And you look at Michigan, they host Texas week two. They host Oregon in November. They obviously are going to play Ohio State. This is a team that win total I know has gotten steamed down. I think a lot of sharp guys took 9.5, still sits at 9. Look, I think 9's probably right, Bud, but I would go under rather than over on Michigan.
I think the question just is, how many teams can actually block Michigan?
Right. Yeah, that D-line's still nasty.
Michigan, for my money, is still the best front seven in the sport. Like, with all due respect to Ohio State, I think they have 7 or 8 guys in the front seven who are going to be high draft picks. So that, to me, says something. But can Michigan score enough to where those teams that can't block them have no chance? Can they run away and hide? The Texas game is interesting because nobody lost a better pair of D-tackles in the country than Texas did. And from my read on Michigan, like, can you name a receiver on Michigan's team right now?
Is Donovan Edwards going to play receiver? I don't know.
We'll have to Google this before the panel tomorrow, but Michigan's going to want to pound the rock. So can Texas stop the run well enough to allow the game not to be played at like a 52-play pace and, you know, real slow, kind of a slog?
My concern with Michigan is who knows what they're going to be offensively. You said name a receiver. They've got a cast of thousands trying out for quarterback.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, name their quarterback.
Name their quarterback, yeah. For 200, Alex. And again, look, Michigan was unbelievable last year. Everybody is going to come after them. And then now the allegations that are the ongoing allegations, the sign stealing, the reports about the COVID practice violations, that impacts the entire staff. Does that matter? Today it doesn't. But when you get in season and you lose a game, and now the drumbeat starts about, oh, you committed all these violations and you're losing now, I think that snowballs. The defending champ, I think it's just going to be so different than last year where everything went really right. And you've got a whole new staff. I mean, Sherrone Moore did incredible last year, but he basically did what Jim Harbaugh wanted to do. Can he do that? And I don't know if Bud agrees or disagrees with me, but I don't see them having the same talent they had last year by any means.
I don't think they have the same talent, Bud. And then coaching staff-wise, look, Wink Martindale has been very successful in the NFL ranks, and maybe it just bleeds right over and he's able to do it. But I know he likes to blitz a lot. You were at Big Ten Media Days. Kind of what did you gather from the folks you talked about? Jesse Minter leaves. He follows Harbaugh. You bring in Wink Martindale. You've got a first-time head coach in Sherrone Moore. Like, there's a lot of questions outside of the fact that they don't bring back a ton of production.
So we spoke with Sam Webb, our Michigan expert at 24/7 Sports, and he doesn't think they're going to blitz all that much, right? Like, of course, like he wants to be aggressive, but if your front seven is that damn good and the back four is as thin as I think it is, given some of the injuries, they already lost Rod Moore, for the season, one of their better safeties. Will Johnson's a stud at corner, but they're not deep there in the secondary, and like they're not very experienced as well because Keon Saab transferred to Alabama. So I think the front four is probably going to have to get pressure for them, and their goal is going to be not to allow explosive plays and try to win in the red zone.
In a weird way.
I'm curious. No, I don't know what Brett's about to say. He's got a smile. Where are we going here, Brett?
As we're all talking about Michigan, you know what it reminds me of? What? Iowa last year.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. The defense is so good. Yeah, without the schedule. I mean, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
Can we go to Iowa? Because I bet the over total over 7.5. I'm looking at it, and I'm like, they're a clear underdog in one game, and that's the Ohio State game, which you could argue it's at the horseshoe, but it's a look-ahead spot for Ohio State. They're going to Oregon the next week, arguably the biggest game of the regular season in college football. And I look at it, I'm like, could the offense be any worse? Tim Lester steps in. They're going to have motion, crazy concept. So, but I know last year the
drive to 325. Yeah, we get the car out and track the road trip to see if Iowa, which for Cover 3 listeners, sneak peek, we're bringing it back. They've not met that goal yet, so we're going to continue that to see.
Defense is still as strong as ever.
Parents told me thinks they'll be better.
All right, so it's now 8. And I still wrote it up for the college football guy. That's why you got to get the podcast. 7.5 was the number out there. But what do you make of Iowa, Bud? Is this team, look, they won 10 games last year with that offense.
So I took them 16-1 and 14-1 to make the Big Ten title game.
Okay. Crazy.
I'm sure CBS executives were like, absolutely not. Please, God, no.
We need Oregon State or Oregon and Ohio State.
But, I mean, they're not going to beat Ohio State. I really don't think.
I don't think so.
But at the same time, does 8-1 get you there? We don't know. By the way, the Big Ten has not released their tiebreaker rules yet.
I know.
Yeah. Like, we're only 2 weeks from the season.
Nobody has, by the way.
I hope that they release them, which is just like, all right, whichever team gives us the best shot to go to the playoffs.
I know you work for CBS, so
we'll
this is me saying and not Bud, but whatever two teams make us the best TV ratings.
But you look at that schedule,
right?
They're going to be favored in 10 or 11 games, and their win total's 8. I talked to Kurt for 20 minutes, who's incredible. A lot of it's off the record I can't share, but a couple of things he said is, look, Cade McNamara, he's never been healthy. Iowa fans, and he goes, selfishly, I haven't seen him healthy in an Iowa uniform. It's going to be different. He's really confident with Tim Lester being the offensive coordinator because Lester is a former head coach. And I said, are you guys going to run tempo? Or are you going to run quick? He goes, Brett, we're going to use our possession smartly. So he's not going to just go running up and down the field. He'll use his defense. Defense is a strength, and they'll have offenses. And finally, he was getting ready to go talk to these guys at CBS. And I'm like, yeah, man. I go, man, people always ask me who my favorite teams are. I don't have favorite teams. I know the sausage is made. I root for coaches. I mean, I'm guilty. And Kurt's always been great to me. You can criticize him for offensively what he's done. And I said, well, hey, man, at least it won't be like last year when you had one arm tied behind your back. And he goes, huh. We're like two arms. So I think they're going to be they have to be vastly improved.
Yeah.
And he said the defense, they got 6 guys that had the COVID year that decided to come back. He said if those guys matched their player better, he thinks they'll be better defensively. And again, you look at that schedule, other than Ohio State, where are they an underdog?
Not
more than a field goal.
They have Nebraska at home, so they'll be
Wisconsin at home.
Toss up
Iowa State. You know, there'll be a slight.
Right, they
favorite.
Have Iowa State
at
Wisconsin,
Minnesota. They're probably what two and a half.
At Maryland, that's you know.
Yeah. Who's
their
playing quarterback?
Their road schedule is so cakeish. Other than Ohio State,
I want to go ahead, bud.
The Big Ten's top heavy.
Yeah,
like we had to do a segment.
Who's the best team in the Big Ten?
It's Ohio State, but like we had to do a.
There we go.
Interesting. Yeah, I like this. So we had to do a segment on CBS, and the producer was like, pick your sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, can I just go last and have my pick be there's no sleeper in the Big Ten? The best teams always win the Big Ten.
Well, I think there's a difference. Like, define sleeper. Is like sleeper a team that could win the conference? And no, I agree 100%. Yeah. I think there's three teams. Like, I don't know if USC could do it. But, like, is a sleeper going over their win total? Like,
well, sure.
Rutgers, right. Indiana's a team that I've now mentioned twice on the show today. Like, Indiana's not even listed there. But they're a team that Kirk Cignetti, man. I win. Google me. You know, it's like
he's saying all the right things.
He is.
He's winning the press conference, and Deshaun Foster is losing the press conference. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. What's their record at the end of the year?
All right, real quickly, we're going to have a break more with Bud Elliott and Brett McMurphy. But Nebraska has not made a bowl what in seven years, yeah. Something like that. Not since Callahan was there, right? So it's been a while. Do they make a bowl game this year, Bud?
Yes.
Brett?
Yes.
Is Dylan Raiola the real deal?
He doesn't even need to be.
It can't be worse than what it was last year.
Matt Rhule talked about it. As long as they're not minus 2,000 in turnover margin, they will get to 6 wins. Will they get to 8 or 9? That depends on the quarterback.
Matt Rhule jumped from, 1 to 6, I think, year 2 at Temple, 1 to 7 at year 2 at Baylor.
He's made that comparison, and he says it's very similar to Temple, except he thinks they're actually in a better position.
Some good stuff there. That was the first segment. We had a commercial break. And then when we came back from commercial break, we jumped into one of the biggest games of week one, maybe one of the biggest games of the college football season, Notre Dame and Texas A&M. Yes, I know I talked about Notre Dame and Texas A&M, but we discussed the loss of Charles Jagasaw and the movement of the total. It was at 49 prior to Notre Dame starting left tackle Charles Jagasaw being knocked out for the season, and it has moved since. Currently, right now, there are some 46 and a halves out there. 47 still available, and I started with Bud yet again and asked him about that move on the total and if he, like I was, part of that movement from 49 down to 47 in the Notre Dame-Texas A&M game.
No doubt. I mean, I had already planned to be as part of that.
Yeah.
I figured the game would close like 45.
Yep.
But two really, really good defensive lines. A&M's got 3 or 4 guys they expect to be drafted. Two really good defensive minds there, obviously on both sides of the ball, at the head coach and also at the coordinator positions. And two quarterbacks I like a lot, but two offensive lines with some real questions. And maybe not a whole lot of like coordination and meshing going on there. With the new quarterback at Notre Dame and obviously the new offense there for A&M. So I think under was the right move there. And getting Nick Scorton from Purdue,
yeah,
for Texas A&M is going to be a problem for A&M on that opening night. It's just, I don't know how the backup handles him. Probably not well.
You look at Notre Dame's schedule, it's a 3-game schedule. Yep. A&M, Florida State, USC. Is Mr. Notre Dame, you probably know this, third year is Lucky Charms for the Irish.
It's either Lucky Charm or this guy's got to go.
Yeah, Ty Willingham or
Charlie
Weiss, Bob Davies.
Yeah. I think they were like
or a national
start.
Championship.
Yeah.
So my thinking is, which Notre Dame team are we going to get? Are we going to get the one that was competitive and should have beat Ohio State but couldn't count past both hands? Or are we going to get one in Marcus Freeman's first year that lost at home as big favorites to Marshall and Stanford? I don't really have a good read on that. At 10, I would absolutely go under. If you tell me they've got to win 11 games to beat me, give me the under. Because at worst, I think I'm going to push on that.
Yeah, I think there's still 10. There's 10 and a halfs out there, so I would say go shop around. You have to pay some extra juice. But, I talked to Pete Sampson. I don't want to spend the whole segment on Notre Dame because we got other things to touch on.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't. I really don't. Because we did that on the podcast, so check that out. But he said 9 wins would be an absolute disaster when you think about all the money that is on this roster, and it's the coaching staff, highest paid coordinators, I believe, in college football, and Al Golden and Mike Denbrock. Retention, keeping Benjamin Morrison, keeping Howard Cross, keeping Riley Mills, getting Riley Leonard. I mean, Notre Dame is all in on this year, and all in is they want a playoff game at home, and it starts with Texas A&M week one there. Do they get in, Brett, with 10 wins? I don't think they do. I mean, I guess it's how it plays out.
Yeah, it's how I think so. They may not host a game, but they're not going to drop below the top 12 or top 11. Group of 5 will be outside the top 12. 10-2 Notre Dame, I think, is in the top 11.
Bud, Ole Miss, a lot of hype. Speaking of big-time portal, they went out. They spent a ton of money in the portal. Jackson Dart is back. Do you believe in Ole Miss? Are they a playoff team this year?
I bet them go to the playoff.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that they are likely a playoff team. They did a lot of work as far as the line of scrimmage, which, I mean, Georgia over Ole Miss was one of my largest bets of the year last year. Just because I didn't think they had the physicality to hang with UGA. It's also helpful that I think the rest of the league, with the exception of maybe Georgia, has come back to them a little bit. Like, they've improved, but Bama's clearly a downgrade, right? I think Texas is a bit of a downgrade from where they were last year in terms of a power rating. So Ole Miss has ascended a little bit in my ratings, but also Bama and Texas have come back to them a little bit, which helps me feel pretty good they'll make the playoff.
Lane Kiffin this year, Brett. It's pressure's on him, man.
Pressure's on. Yeah, and the one thing we don't know is how will Ole Miss live up to these expectations. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Kiffin talked about it in Dallas at SEC Media Days. Rat poison. He doesn't want to hear about how good they're supposed to be. Double-digit wins last season. If they win double digits again this year, Lane Kiffin will be the first coach to do that at Ole Miss since some guy named John Vaught did. Who's he? Well, they named the stadium after him. So maybe they'll call it Portal King Field at Vaught Stadium, Vaught Hemingway Stadium. I really like Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss and Missouri are kind of being paired together as SEC sleepers that maybe can get to the playoff. I like Ole Miss much, much more than Missouri. Missouri lost their running back. I just think they're more solid overall. I don't know if you agree with me, Bud, yeah. But I think Missouri last year, that win, their win-loss record, very impressive. A lot of coin flip games that could have, should have gone the other way. You hit a 61-yard field goal to beat Kansas State.
I had him that day. Thank you very much for that kick. That was awesome.
nice time management there at the end of the game. So, but I really like Ole Miss. They're strong. The unknown, and you don't know till you get in this situation, is how do these kids, how do they deal with now they're, you know, it's cliche, now they're the hunted, not the hunter, and you have all these expectations on them.
But when you look at Alabama, Kalen DeBoer steps in. Their win total sits at 9.5. They haven't won less than 10 regular season games since 2010. Now, the schedule's very challenging, and I don't think Wisconsin's, yeah, I know I listen to you guys. I know that you guys aren't really that high on Wisconsin this year, but you got to go to Camp Randall. It's always a tricky place to play. Oh, there's Georgia. That should be fun. At Tennessee, you get Missouri, at LSU. There's not a lot of layups outside of, you know, Mercer, even South Florida. Hell, they almost beat them last year, you know? So, and I think South Florida could be a sneaky team in the AAC. So Kalen DeBoer, year one, you get plus money on the over. What do you expect from the Crimson Tide this year?
So I did bet Alabama to make the playoff. I think it was plus 30 or plus 20. I took an under 6 conference wins.
I love the conference win total market, by the way. It is awesome.
I do too, because some of these other books, you can't scrape them. You actually have to search individual team by team. So I feel like that some of the guys who just arbitrage only, it's more of a pain.
Yeah, for me, real quickly, you know, I wanted to bet Houston under, and I was too late to the 4.5. Oh, 2.5? Conference wins? Okie dokie. Duke, I wanted to bet under 6.5. Gone. 5.5. 2.5? Okay, I'll take that. So, yeah, look around. Conference wins is an interesting market.
In the last 3 years, Kalen DeBoer, as an offensive coach or head coach, has had his quarterback be either a 1,000-yard rusher or the team's leading rusher 3 times. So I'd be much more concerned if I thought he was trying to make Jalen Milroe into Michael Penix.
Right.
I think he's going to run the heck out of Jalen Milroe.
So let's wrap on this. Bud Elliott over there. Brett McMurphy here. We're in the time right now, and you know, all three of us have been doing it for multiple months. So now it's the kind of rush of, oh, I love this team. I love this team. And you're starting to hear these teams percolate, and you're like, oh, man, I don't buy in on that. So, Brett, I'll start with you. Who is the one of the darlings out there that you're not buying?
I don't know necessarily if Missouri is a darling.
No, I'd say
but I on my AP preseason top 25 ballot, I think I had them down at 15 or 16, which of course their fan base piled on saying, why are they ranked behind Kansas State? And, you know, I just, again, you know, they've lost their stud running back. Last year, I think the win-loss record was misleading. That stuff usually evens out. And, you know, you got Alabama and Oklahoma in consecutive weeks at A&M. I want to see them do it.
Why are they going to UMass? Can you do a deep dive on why they're playing a game?
Because they've never been to the worst stadium in college football, and they wanted to go. But it was funny. I saw Drinkwitz at SEC spring meetings and back in around Memorial Day, and he was actually getting off the elevator, and I grabbed him, and I'm like, where is it? I can't find it. And he goes, find what? And I said, the bullseye. You're going to be preseason top 10. And he goes, it's right here. So I think, you know, not that they're feeling the heat, but they know the expectations. Yeah. So if there are these cliche trendy pick, I'm actually going against it.
Bud?
SMU. Mm. I bet this team a lot last year, but oftentimes they were facing backup quarterbacks at the American Conference level. They also like dodged a lot of the better offenses in that league last year. They didn't play USF. They didn't play UAB. So, I mean, they were really beating up on what was a terrible collection of offenses last year. And I think the step up in competition is more than people realize.
Yeah, I mean, they went 0-3 against Power 4 teams last year, right? Oklahoma, TCU wasn't really that good, and then they lost the bowl game. It's funny because you look at the schedule before we get out of here, you know, where's Clemson? Where's Miami?
They miss everybody.
They miss everybody except Florida State. But that said, but I did play over 7.5 at SMU, and like a week after I made that bet, I'm like, you know what? I don't really love this bet.
Yeah, but you timed it right.
There's been 16 schools that have changed conferences in the last dozen years. Of those 16, only three have had a winning record in conference play their first year in their new league.
Well, I certainly didn't like the way it ended there with the negativity towards SMU, but that is kind of where I stand too, where it does feel like it's just one-way traffic on the positivity of SMU jumping from the ACC or AAC to the ACC, but the schedule works out in their favor. But Brett McMurphy with that last kind of dagger into my side there on teams jumping from one conference to the next, making that big jump up. Now, I would say, and he cleared it up when we did our chat with the folks at Bet Bash, there are some lateral moves this year, no doubt, when you think about, you know, Oregon and Washington, Utah, all of those moves of the Pac-12 to their new conferences. But SMU's a jump up, and we will see how they fare, certainly in a all-power four schedule this upcoming year, even though they do get some fortunate breaks, missing out on Clemson, missing out on Miami, missing out on Virginia Tech, and missing out on NC State, playing Florida State at home. But really good stuff, really appreciated Bud Elliott, Brett McMurphy, for jumping on the podcast. Thanks to Stanford Steve. Lengthy conversation with him earlier here on the podcast. As always, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. I've seen the numbers. They continue to be steady. You guys are awesome. Let's keep it rolling. And we, before we know it, we'll be picking winners every Thursday with Matt Eumanns. Speaking of which, Matt Eumanns, he will be jumping on the podcast to preview the Big Ten later this week, as will Tyler Shoemaker, as we will discuss the CUSA with Tyler. Both Matt and Tyler broke down those respective conferences in the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, which once again, available now, all types of offers out there. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Thanks to producer Wyatt and producer Ryan. They did an awesome job with this podcast, putting it together, getting it out to you as quickly as possible. We're back later this week, Matt Eumanns and Tyler Shoemaker. But until then, this has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.